Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations that discuss solutions for the Black community, presents Black Urban America. And my name is Kenny Jones, and I have with me
Nishawn Williams.
All right. Anybody that has a comment or a question, you can press 1. Or dial in 516-531-9540 and press 1. We'll like to hear from you. The lineup for this week is that on Saturdays we have Call to Steve with Provocative Thought. Comes to at 8 o'clock p.m. And tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m. we have The Cutting Edge with Nishawn. And every fourth Tuesday we have Tori Bellum. Okay, so that is our lineup. With us tonight, we have a very busy young man in the area of Chicago who is an advocate and works on behalf of the Black community. Matter of fact, Black and Brown community, I have to say. But, you know, this program right here addresses issues concerning the Black community. But I'd like to welcome Mr. Alonzo Waheed. Good evening, brother. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for that introduction.
Good. No problem. Let's start off by saying we hear a lot going around this nation and with Black Lives Matter. Their number one solution is to defund the police and take those resources and provide it for other programs and services that are in the Black community. How do you feel about defunding the police?
Well, again, first I would like to say thank you all for having me on the show. And with that, I want to say that we have to recognize that we're in troubled waters at this time, and the waters have been murky and muddy for a while, almost to the point where they not only drowned us, but it's been very, very rare that any of us actually been able to come up for air. And right now, during this time, we are actually coming up for air. They've had their foot on our necks. They've hung us from our necks, all right? And with that, the whole country now recognizes what we've been saying for over 400 years, that we just want to breathe. All right, we're here in this country, came into this country under protest, came in through slavery, not wanting to be here, but was forced here to have forced labor. And then from that, laws were created to keep us in bondage in slavery. And then you fast forward today, where we have a police force that still operates by those laws, by that mindset, and we're saying that those days are over. We can no longer tolerate our lives being taken, and then individuals are feeling that they're justified in doing that, and they're hiding behind a shield of protection, saying that they are the law. Well, the laws need to change, and for those laws to change, we immediately start defunding the police, demilitarizing the police, making sure that they're having adequate training to understand how to work in a community that they're servicing, not penalizing, not keeping in bondage, not keeping in captivity, not terrorizing, but actually servicing. So this is what the defunding part is actually about. And yes, I'm 100% in support of it.
Okay. When it's all said and done, everybody goes home. And right now, people are probably planning and organized. We had different segments in our communities that had different solutions. Like some say separation. Some say vote. Some say become entrepreneurs. Some say correct the educational system. Some say prison reform or criminal justice reform. What avenues do you support the most for our communities to endure?
Well, first of all, I'll say that we're dealing with a complex problem, but it doesn't mean that there's a complex solution. It's a very simple solution. One, we have to recognize that we are a people. We are a people with worth. We are a people with value. And the truth to that matter is that we built this country. And ultimately, for anything to be done, since this is a capitalistic society, we have to acknowledge the fact that it's going to start with capital. We came into this country and was considered the capital. We're the only people that that has happened to, that we come into a country and we're considered the capital. And we also considered the labor. So we were the capital and we were the labor. And we're saying now, when you ask me what do I think should happen, is that we release those shackles from us, that we're no longer the capital, we're no longer the labor, and that we're paid for the time that we've spent not only building this country, but building up the people, building up everyone else in this country beside ourselves. We own less than 1% of production in this country. It's very rare that you see us at the top of the 1% unless it involves entertainment. So we believe that that should change. And we believe that when we introduce bills such as H.R. 40, that that helps to change that. When we start looking at what does it mean to have reparations, who are the individuals that should receive reparations, and what does that process look like? Because once you have the reparations, the school system change. Once you have reparations, the economic situation changes. Once you have reparations, the housing industry changes. Once you have reparations, an individual now have the means not only for survival, but the individual now have the means to live. And we have to transition from mere survival to actually living. So when we start looking at what does it mean for us to have reparations, I think that that's the catalyst for us releasing ourselves from this bondage that we've been in for over 400 years.
Go ahead, Ms. Sean. You have a question?
Yeah. How long do you think it will take for a systemic change in the law enforcement?
Well, I think that that's up to us as a people. It can change overnight. They write laws overnight. So once the laws are changed and actually enforced, that's when things will actually change for us as a people. We can't no longer sit back and wait for it, and that's why we're at this time where it must be demanded. It must be demanded Our cries must be heard and must be responded to. And there's no time for division, and there's no time for patty cake in this situation. This has been going on for far too long, and the time for it is over. And those laws could change seriously overnight. If they needed to make a law, they write the law into effect, the law is passed. The problem is we have to deal with the true reality that individuals do not look at us as people. They do not look at us as their equals. So they write these laws. This is written into the Constitution, which this country is built upon, to say these are the laws that govern this country, that you're still considered a slave if you commit a felony, right? There is still servitude that you can serve. So if we have the very fibers of slavery still written into the Constitution, we have to change that. And these things can happen overnight. The problem is we have to push it. We have to know what to ask for. We have to realize that there's a lot of games being played where it comes to division of people, us as a people as a whole, where they offer breadcrumbs instead of the whole factory. And I'm thinking that we need to even get away from wanting the bread factory, where we understand that we can grow our own wheat and we can have our own land, and then we can have our own factories, and we can get so much more than just the breadcrumbs that they're offering us.
You know how long we've been trying to educate people about having your own thing, have your own economy, have your own party, just having your own, doing for self. But I just want to ask you this before I go on. 516-531-9540. If you have a question or a comment, just press 1. What do black folks got to do? Now, what we've been focusing on for the last couple months, this is what the United States have to do. This would have to, they have to, the United States have to get their act together, okay? What do, because we're not innocent in this whole formula either. What do we have to do in order for change?
For there to be true change, it has to be a change of mind. It has to be a realization that we're better than this condition that we're in, and we don't have to settle for it. If you can't truly blame an individual that has been victimized and traumatized, and they decide that it's more comfortable for them to stay in a situation where they're more comfortable being there instead of fighting and risking losing their life. The truth is, individuals have been comfortable with police doing stop and frisk. Everyone has talked about it, but the truth is these conditions steady persist. Then you move from stop to frisk to just blanket disregard for human life and executions. And we've seen this happen numerous amount of times. So with that being said, we've gotten away from stand up and fight for your rights, where we can see all of our leaders have been murdered, have been assassinated. So now what's being taught is don't say too much. Don't look them in the eye. Follow the plan. Stay out the way. Get you a good job. Take care of yourself and take care of your family. And, you know, everything will be all right. And the truth is we don't have to do that. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. We have lives. That means just as much, if not more, than everyone else's. And to sit up here and assassinate us on the streets and think that it's wrong for us to fight back is truly not only a misguided principle, but it's also a way to forever have control over a people. We can't forget how they used to take the most masculine slave at that time who wanted to fight back and tear his body apart in front of everybody else to show them this is what will happen when you fight back. So, yes, we as a people do need to make some changes, but you have to understand the psychological oppression and mindset and terrorism that has happened to us, and that doesn't be removed overnight. So as we recondition ourselves, change our frame of mind, understand who we are and have self-worth for ourselves, understand that we are better than this, that we don't have to stand for this anymore. That's the problem that we have to deal with within ourselves. But as we deal with that problem, we turn back into who we were from the very beginning, and that's the kings that we are.
All right, we have a caller already. Chime in this caller. Okay, 5240, welcome to Black Urban America. You're on the line.
Okay, yes, this is an urban outlook. What the brother said is 100% right on. You know, we have to change our mind frame. We have to do all that. But one thing that I noticed that in the black community, you know, being raised in the ghetto, that, you know, when we do be prosperous or we do try to come up, there's always jealousy. There's always envy. There's always personally, you know what I mean? I have a story, but I go into that maybe another time. But there's always, you know, we need to work together. We say that. But every time we work together, there's always one of us that's going to bring us back down. It's jealousy, envy. Somebody might get more than me. So as far as us blacks working together, I understand that coming together and you know, we need more than breadcrumbs. But it's still until every black changes their mind and say, I don't mind the other man getting 100,000 because I'm going to get 100,000. You have to get out. But no, you get your 100,000, the other man rob you, steal, try to tear you down. So that's the thing. The black community, everybody have to come together. So we have to have the same mind frame, because if we don't, all this getting and being governed and all that, everybody know that's not going to work in the black community. There's jealousy, there's envy, there's tear you down mentality. So that's one thing we have to change. So we can all talk about getting together and do our own thing. That's fine, that's great. But let's be realistic. The African American men, let's be realistic. We all know how we truly are. From Chicago to Philadelphia, it don't matter what city you're in, somebody going to be envy. Somebody going to want to tear us down when we try to do something. We start prospering. Jealousy going to always come. And that's one of the things that's going to hinder us.
Go ahead, Brother Waheed.
Well, first of all, I would like to say that what you're speaking of is truth. But what's also truth is that we can't forget that that's only one side of the coin. And we don't have to accept that, because all you have to do is turn to the other side of the coin. We have models out there, whereas we actually have worked together. We can't forget Black Wall Street. We can't forget Bronzeville, Chicago. We can't forget these meccas that we've had, that all of the blacks work together, right? And what has happened is the mindset has become that once I make it, I have to move away from my people because they're not good enough. I have to move away, or I have to possess something that someone else has, and then that makes me successful. So with that, you have individuals scrunching and scribing, trying to possess something so they can have a sense of being successful. This is where you start getting individuals playing the Joneses, right? Whereas since they brought this house, now I want that house. But the truth is, when we're all in the same community and you don't have nowhere else to go, and we all have these houses, I could need to go over there and help protect his house, because I understand that when they come and they burn his house down, my house is going to be next. We can't forget the days where we used to go borrow sugar and butter from one another because we couldn't go nowhere else. See, it's one thing to say that it's the crab in the barrel mentality. The thing is, we don't have to be in that barrel, and we have to understand that we're not crabs. Like, this was never our mindset. This was a taught mindset. It was house nigga against field nigga. Let me show the house nigga that I'm going to give him a little bit more so then he'll watch that field nigga. Okay, and so now we have to change that mindset that not only are we all in the same boat, but we're all being treated the same, because they don't care if you have a doctor's degree or whether you're out here selling drugs on the street. When you walk down that block and the police pull you over, they have no problem with killing both of you all. All right, we've had countless times where we heard police officers say how they're mistreated in their own department. We have countless times where we see law enforcement, whether it's FBI, DEA, it doesn't even matter. They're saying, hey, once I pull that badge off, right, I'm still treated as though I'm just a black man. Because the bottom line, that it's all over with, said and done, that's who and what you are. And until we get back to that mindset and start understanding that we are people that's all dealing with this, regardless of your religious practice, regardless of your financial situation, regardless of your gender, we can't keep allowing these superficial things to divide us, and understand that we must move on one accord. And when it affects one of us, it affects all of us. And that's what changes. And yes, we're always going to have some rotten apples in a barrel. So you pull those rotten apples out and you have a model. You say, hey, listen, even if I could trust one person, okay, let's figure out what we can do together and then how we allow others to come in to be part of this group here. And then you just start building from that, because it's going to always be someone that's going to be corrupt, all right? But we're smart enough to know how to weed that off. And as we weed that out, we're showing everyone, all right, that we can function as a people, as a society, and we can continue to grow, because we have not only done this before, but the truth is we've built everyone else up. So how could we build everyone else up and not be able to build ourselves up? And it's, again, changing that mindset that we're not good enough to work with one another. If you can just find two or three people and start that way, then right there you're successful.
Thank you for the call. Let's see who's next here. We have 8051. You're on the line. Welcome to Black Earth America. 8051. You're on the line. Something's wrong with your phone. Okay, let's go to the next caller. We have 6085. You're on the line. Welcome to Black Earth America.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Black Earth America.
Yeah, thank you. I called last week, and I'm from Tallahassee, and I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I raised my kids practically on my own. And what I'm having problem with is seeing the black men go down like they are. As a mother, I feel the mothers need to step up and do more than they're doing. Yes, we have to raise our kids on our own, but I know that I raised, even as I did it on my own, that we got into trouble, but they came back, and I thank God for that. But I'm saying that more mothers need to stand up until. Stop waiting until you hear that your child got shot and then want to start making complaints. Start doing this now while your child is young, so you don't have to go through this having to bury your child. Get with your church family. Do what you have to do to save our black young man. And now the girls is doing things that is not right for them. We have to save our black children, but we have to start in the home. And I feel that if more mothers would stay out of the streets, stay in the house and raise their children, that this would be a better world. I just feel that it needs to start in the house. Can I get an answer to that?
Well, instead of an answer, I'll say that I thank you for your statement, and I applaud that, because the truth is, for you to be able to say that outside of being a single mother, you was able to still raise your sons, raise your children, that right there, I applaud you. But more importantly than that, I'll say that it's actually a segue to the fact that we can't forget that we aren't alone, and then that we don't have to allow each other to be alone, that we now have developed this sense of individualism where it's just about self, and we need to be able to get away from that and understand that who we are, we always understood that it took a village to raise that child. I couldn't go down the street hollering and cussing without someone looking at me saying, not only will I whoop your butt, but I'm going to whoop your butt, and I'm going to take you to your mama who's going to whoop your butt. Because the whole village surrounded me and took care of me and made sure that I was lining up the right way. So I think that the males, the females, need to come together, understanding that this is not only our fight, but this is our responsibility to not only raise our children, but raise the children the best way that we can, because they're our future. And a lot of times it was not on purpose that we have broken households, that we have single families out here, single moms and single fathers, right? But understand that we always have a community. We always have one another, and we have to have the mindset that we can go back to that and not only have to only depend on self, but you truly can depend on one another, because that's who we are as a people. We've always been a community people. We've always been a tribal people, and we have to understand again who we are and push off and shed off these ways that actually segregate us and alienate us from one another. And as we do that, we become better because we depend on one another.
Thank you for your statement, ma'am. And I just want to say this, Father, that, you know, you are a hero in our community. All the women that raise these families without the men being present, raise good kids to become productive adults, are heroes. And I thank you. Okay, the next caller is, okay, we have, 2503. Welcome to Black Urban America.
Hello.
Hello, welcome to Black Urban America. You're on the line.
Thank you. I'd just like to say all the comments that I've been hearing this evening were correct. My comment is that we still are living under the slave master's rule of divide and conquer, even in our households, on our jobs, and out on the street. And what we got to do is stop the mentality that they can control us, because that's what they're doing to keep us where we are. If one person, like they said, get ahead, we feel if we haven't gotten ahead, we don't want to accept that instead of doing things for ourselves. And we got to learn how to unite ourselves no matter what and block out that mentality that they've been doing to us for 400 years, because they should not be controlling us, but they're doing it in everything we do. Even, as I said, on the jobs, they divide, they'll find one black person and treat them well. So like they said, they'll snitch on the other black people that work for them to make themselves look good. And a lot of people don't understand what they're doing. They don't want us to unite, because if we unite, we are really powerful. And as a black race, we got to step up and say, hey, we're tired of this, and you're not going to do it anymore. And a lot of the black people aren't on the road for that progress right now, because they're sitting at home saying, it's not happening to me. But it's anytime something happens to one black person, it's happening to everybody. It's just not your turn. And I think we need to put our differences aside and get together, because once we get together, they're going to be the minorities. And they can't control us, and we'll have more than we ever had, and they had, too. And I really like your program, and I hope you stay on forever. Thank you.
That means I got to live forever. I don't think I'm going to live forever. Maybe my daughter will take over once I'm called home. Thank you so much for that, daughter. Go ahead, Brother Waheed. Tackle that.
I want to, you all, like, just in that conversation right there, you've all gave a solution to the problem. One of the reasons that we have this disconnect is because individuals have refused to pass the baton. Individuals have refused to share knowledge. They've kept it to themselves, where we saw legacies actually die out. Even when we look at something very simple, right, as passing along that recipe of grandma's dressing, right? Passing on that recipe of how to make that banana pudding, or passing on that medicinal skill on how to mix that cottage oil together with some peppermint to knock that cold out. See, once we start sharing these things, we actually start becoming one. So then I start also sharing my economical power. I also start sharing the fact that, you know what, I have life insurance. Do you have life insurance? Or, you know what, I'm part of this investment group. Do you want to be a part of this investment group? Or I developed this skill set at work. Do you understand that you can get stipend to help pay for your college? Because they have this set up at our job. But we've gotten away from sharing information. We've gotten away from passing on a baton. We've become so comfortable with someone else doing everything for us and then holding on to everything that we're getting that now it dies with us. But when we pass that baton on, it lives forever. So everyone under the sound of my voice, if you just was able to do one simple thing, whether it's passing on a recipe, passing on some knowledge, passing on a skill set, if you just did that with one person, whether it's in your family or outside of your family, believe me, we can continue to start growing, and this helps to start building that relationship because now we're back in communication with one another. And this is how we begin to solve our problem.
Thank you for the call. Okay, let's, again, if you have a comment or a question, just press 1. People listening from laptop, the number is 516-531-9540. Press 1 if you have a comment or a question. Yes, let's move into the other issue, the state of the black family. There's some alarming statistics out there when they examine the structure of the black family. And since I'm a black man, you know, been a black man all my life, inside and out, as well as outside, we talk about dropping the baton. I think it started maybe with my generation, not staying in the home with the mother of the children and helping raise the children, or not being involved with the children. Even if you have more than one family, even if you have more than one set of children, not being responsible not being responsible for taking care of the children. And I know there are economic pressures, financial issues in our communities where skills and jobs and not only owned businesses are not easily available as they are in other cultures. And then we take the illegal route, but we're not the only culture in the world that take the illegal route. But we have 2 million brothers doing a part of the criminal justice system, whether probation, parole, drug court, doing state time or fed time. When you say 2 million black men, you say 2 million fathers. There are 2 million families without their fathers. They've given us long periods of time, too, 10, 15, 20, 30 years to life, like it's just giving out candy. So I just want to give your perspective on the structure of the black family in today's black communities.
Well, I want to start off by saying that a lot of times when you hear about the black community and the black people's plight, you would have black people themselves and other people outside of our race point to the black church and say that that is our most powerful base. This is where we were able to organize, that we are very spiritual people, and this is where we galvanize that. This is where we draw our strength. And I'm ready at this point in my life to push back from that and to say that that's not where we're at our strongest at. We're very, 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 very powerful there, but it was the black family that went to church. And as you started breaking down that black family, you understood, individuals understood, after they came out with this demonic plan to destroy the black family, which means now they no longer have this spiritual base. They no longer believe in self. They no longer believe or have self-worth, right? Now you could break apart that strongest potential. And the strongest potential that you have is to not only recreate yourself through a family, but able to, as we just said earlier, as we started tapping on it, being able to transfer all of your knowledge, transfer your wealth to your family so that your legacy continues to move on. And so with that, individuals recognized that they had to tear apart the black family. So when I hear individuals talk about all of the black men that dropped the baton, all of the black men that's in prison, individuals not paying child support, and then it's immediately individuals will say, yeah, you know, they don't get no pass. You know, these things aren't right. And I'm saying you don't have to talk about giving them a pass. Let's look at what the reality is. All the way from slavery, again, when you tore apart the black family, as they continue to even try to still hide, risk death, all right, to be married, you will have the master come in and rape the wife, impregnate her, okay? And then after that, would look at the father and say that this is how I treat you. This is how I demean you, degrade you, whereas you have no worth. You have no standing in her eyes because at any time I could come and do what I want to do to her. All the way to the point where she would want to sacrifice herself to save your life. So with that being said, you have a psychological manipulation. So then as you fast forward and say, well, what happened after slavery? What happened after Jim Crow? You have to understand that they started writing laws to make sure that we still tore apart the family. Whereas when you look at even something as simple as the FHA and start looking at what they really did with redlining, you have to understand that the National Housing Act of 1934, which created the FHA, was in response to the Great Depression. And this had dire consequences for African Americans. There was a chief economist named Homer Hoyt, and he wrote a dissertation entitled 100 Years of Land Values in Chicago. And so the FHA was to devise a strategy that would help to reverse the plummeting housing market at that time. There was a lot of jobs being lost, a lot of unemployment foreclosures. We've all heard that, and we all even see that right now today. But what was they were supposed to do was to boost the market for single-family homes. But this economist, he came out with this dissertation, and guess what he did? He said, let's rank individuals by race and nationalities in orders of their desirability. So these are the individuals that we would lend money to. These are the individuals that would be able to buy these houses. So guess who was number one on the list? The number one desired nationality to receive these loans was Anglo-Saxons and Northern Europeans. All right? You get the English, Germans, Irish, Scots. All of them was mixed in. But followed that, you got the Northern Italians, Polish, Russians, and then Jews. And then these were the lower class. But the lowest class, guess who you think was there? The African Americans. And why this is important is you got to understand that if you don't have no homes to take care of your family, where are you going to stay at? And then more importantly than that, they was able to get these loans, keep the community segregated, whereas anyone that's not living inside certain districts, you not only couldn't get no home, but you couldn't get no car loans. You couldn't get no home loans. So you can take that home loan and then balance that out, whereas you could say, well, I have a home. Let me now use that as collateral to pay for my son or daughter to go to college. This is what they've done. And all of these things affected us and still affect us to this day. After that, they come up with a project. And this is why they call these buildings that we were staying in the projects, where they will house all of the African Americans and say, you all stay in these communities here. But it was never no way that you ever owned anything. It was always the government was able to take care of you. From that, you start getting Section 8. From Section 8, still, there's no true ownership of anything. Yes, this is supposed to help you and to boost you up, but what happens is you have individuals that will stay on this Section 8, all right, and this will go on for years, and they're never having no capital to have real survival, where they could pass down a home to their children. All right, so now what happens is, and this is very, very important, you have males that could not stay in the home with their family. So for her to receive that Section 8, the male couldn't stay there. So this is where you start getting the hustlers and the players, because you have to stay outside the house just to be able to take care of your family. So now you're going house to house. So we started off in slavery where you was just a stud, where the only thing that you had to do was create kids, and you never had the responsibility of taking care of that child. Then we moved to after the Great Depression, where even if you wanted to stay in the house, the wife would not be able to receive the benefits to take care of herself. Now everybody is starving, but she will not be able to get the benefits if you stayed in the house because you're a man. So now you have to leave outside the house for her to take care of herself and take care of your kids. And then now we fast forward to them coming inside the schools after the Industrial Revolution, coming inside the schools and taking away all of the trades. So with the trades, you would be able to become a plumber, electrician, a carpenter, and you had a very good job. You was able to have a job that took care of you and your family. But then they took all of those vocations out of the school, and the things that they promoted and propagated was becoming a doctor, becoming a lawyer, which meant that you had to go to school for 8 years or more, all right, go into debt, and then after you go into debt, you'll be able to now have this great living where you got the big house and the white picket fences, right, and the 2.5 kids that now you can take care of. But the thing is, that was not for, and it still is not for everybody. And we are people that worked with our hands. We was able to take care of ourselves and take care of our families, had 4 kids, had a good pension, had medical, right, where we can now take care of our family. But then what happens is all of that is taken away. Then that's by design, which where when you start looking at after the 70s, then we get to the 80s where they come in with the drug epidemics, where they dump the drugs into the community. After they dump the drugs into the community, and have the mothers and the fathers hooked on drugs, okay, after the Vietnam War, where everybody is hooked on heroin, and then they introduced the crack cocaine after that. Mm-hmm. Again, this was targeted in our communities. And this is why we fight so hard
and
for bills like
foster care became big business. Yeah, foster care became big business in the 80s. Yeah, it took our children
away. After that, that became the tool for you to be able to take care of yourself and to take care of your family, because that was the industry that was introduced to our communities. Mm-hmm. So now after that, you have to understand that there's no other jobs. And then, but then what they connect to that is the industrial prisons, whereas now they're shipping everyone down to these farms where the bottom that fell out of the farms, but for these farmers to have an income to take care of their family, and none of these farmers look like us, right? They now build prisons there. And then they ship us out to these prisons to house these prisons. And then as we house these prisons, what people don't understand is that, and this is very, very, very important, so pay attention to this. They also get more money in their communities because they're saying that you're a citizen of their community. So when they run a census, here's a community that, just say, for the sake of argument, had 10,000 people in the community. But nowadays, boost their population by 30,000, okay, because they shipped in another 30,000 individuals that don't have nothing to do with that community or know where they are. And you can drive straight down 57 going south, and you will see all of these prisons there. So this is how families were torn apart. This is how the males aren't in a household. And this is why we as males have to step to the forefront, have better communication, take upon a responsibility upon ourselves, saying we understand the hurt and the harm that was caused, and step to the plate to do not only what we know is right, what we know what must be done. Even when you look at any spiritual scriptures, it talks about how a man is an infidel for not taking care of his children, right? That child is you. That child comes from you. But let's be totally frank. It's not easy to do this, especially when you have not seen it. We're asking individuals to be something that they have no idea on how to be. So now we have to model what it is that we want. We have to model what it is we need. And we have to understand that it's for a bigger and higher purpose than us. Because for us to live on, for us to be better, we have to have that investment in our kids and give back to the families which we've created.
Let me see. You Sean?
Yeah. How can we build stable and safe black communities and become that tribe or village again?
I think that it starts with the family. I think it starts with the – because, like, a lot of people don't pay attention to this, right? And let's be frank for a moment. We already have those tribes and those villages, and whether you want to call them organizations, whether you want to call them families, whether you want to call them split families, whether you want to call them extended families, we know how to get along. We can have one guy who may have two separate women that he's had children by, right? And they have to figure out how to get along. The truth is, in the beginning, it may not have started off well, but they have to figure out how do they get along, and for the benefit of not only the child, but for both of them to have some peace, all right, let's figure out how to get along. And when we can start communicating effectively with one another, stop the scheming and the lying and the backbiting, stop the undercutting, admit who we are and what we need from one another, evaluating ourselves and bringing it to the forefront, I think once those families start uniting again, everything else, our communities start growing, because it's very easy to see a reality when it's one woman have a child by two different men. Now, if those two different men could figure out how to get along together and understand the value in that woman who gave them, who gave both of them children, all right, this is how we start bringing each other back together, because for what everybody else would tell us, this, they should be at each other's head. They should be fighting each other. But the truth is they don't have to do that. We have to mature beyond what Western civilization has taught us and get back to the fact that it takes all of us working together. It had to be something that was common in both of you all, that y'all found something interesting in her. So how about building upon the fact that y'all both have a mindset that y'all both like this one thing? And if y'all can understand that, that y'all more alike than you all are different, and learn how to not only communicate but work together for a higher cause, that's when we start changing everything. And I think that we're at a point where we definitely can do that, because us as a people are already doing it and have been doing it for all our time. It's time to acknowledge that and get away from what everybody else told us we should be, how everyone else told us that we should live, what is acceptable, and just realize that this is what works for us, and we move forward like that.
Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay, how can we get our communities actively involved?
I think that for us to get our communities actively involved, they have to have a sense of value and worth in the community and be able to see that if they took a step forward, they was able to be productive and accomplish what they set out to do. It's very, very hard. And I say this as a man, when you're trying to accomplish anything, whether it's knocking down a tree, whether it's laying some drywall, whether it's planting a seed and watching a tree grow, when you're doing everything you can and you're seeing that you're not getting nowhere. But even if you're washing that tub out and you put that bleach on there, and you put that comment on there, and you scrubbing away, and you saying, okay, this tub has been dirty for 10 years. But when you see that little elbow grease that you're putting in there, that is starting to get that tub clean, you will continue to keep on doing it. You'll say, okay, I'm making some headway. I can get this accomplished. So what ends up happening is you start figuring out better ways. Maybe if I add a little bleach to this. Maybe if I use a scouring pad, right, because I'm getting something done. But after year after year after year, time after time after time that you're steady scrubbing, you're steady pushing, and you're not seeing anything get done, you step away. You say, maybe I need to do something else, or maybe I need to get rid of the whole tub. And I think that that's where we're at right now, is for especially the youth. They need to be able to see that if they did galvanize and they went out and voted, if they was able to remove an individual from office, if they did have a protest, right, if they was actually able to get something done. And that's why I believe that this is the opportune time, because the whole country is affecting the whole world, and all eyes is on what America is going to do now, because we're saying that we're no longer will we tolerate this injustice to us as a people. And now it's time to get something done. And if we can just start taking the steps to get individuals involved, to have individuals educated so they can understand what it actually means to vote, the power of a vote, the power of being involved, the power of organizing, that everything changes there because they're seeing something actually getting done.
All right, well, a couple minutes left. Brother Wahi, we only have a couple minutes left. If somebody needs some information or a need for you to come speak and everything, give out your information and see. There's another caller, and this caller, let's see if they got their phone together. Let's see. You're on the line, 2503.
I see. Okay, I'd like to comment. The question was, where is the black family headed? I'd like to say something about the black family. The male of the household. The Bible says a man should be the head of his household. And my thing is, some of the black men out there think they got 10 households, and they're still living under slavery. Slave masters sent you here, there, and everywhere, not God. And until they decide that they want to be a head of a household, they will get one. And I don't think one man is going to have everybody in five households on the same page. He's not king. He's trying to be like Trump, a dictator. and us women are not looking for dictators.
Hold on, man. Number you're trying to say all brothers are trying to be dictators, man? Are you saying that, brothers?
Exactly. And, you know, they got to get out of that. They still living like they slaves here, there, and everywhere. And personally, I don't think a lot of black men give black women the respect that they do, because if it wasn't for us doing slavery, they wouldn't even be here. But yet they go out. You know why we got so many single black women? Because the black male done gone to the white woman, something they think that they have to have. And I just want them to look in the mirror and see what they see. They don't see no white person standing, staring back at them. And yes, we can do something about the family. The family starts at home. And if you try, everybody starts taking over their household, say for Chicago, you can stop that. The police can't, because these kids come from us. And if we don't stand up to these little punks that's running around killing up each other, my son couldn't come in my house and talk back to me. My daughters can't come in my house and talk back to me. Even if they grown, they have to give me the respect or get out. And we got to take back our home and raise families. You got babies out there having babies. They don't know what to do. And we got to start making sure that they're taken care of. And everybody needs to look at that Maslow's hierarchy. Because when any one of those hierarchies are out of place, you got trouble. whether it's no place to stay, no food, no job, and you got to believe in something. Everybody got to believe in something. You got your God and something you believe in. But the family, I don't think it's ever going to leave. And black people can have the best families in the world because we started it. And we shouldn't take nothing like they making us take. Because
yeah, we started civilization. It's one thing I want to agree with you. It's one thing I want to agree with you, ma'am, that we have to take back our homes. And we have to put structure and boundaries back into our homes and making our children start respecting the parents. But also the parents got to earn that respect, too. They can't be going around here acting like they're 16 and they're 50 years old, 45 years old,
exactly.
40. You got brothers 40, 45 years old walking around with their pants hanging down. I mean, like, I'm not condoning it, I'm not against it or anything like that. But I'm just saying, you just can't do the same thing as a 15-year-old. Let the 15-year-olds do it. That's their fashion. That's their time then. You know, I mean, like, people didn't like when we wore oversized clothes, but that was our fashion. You know, but we knew who to respect. You know, because I'm starting to see a lot of that. Kids disrespecting the adults in the household because we're allowing that. Because we're afraid.
Right.
Of what happens too.
Yeah. And before we get off, I know we only have a certain amount of time. I want to thank the individual for the young woman for her comment that she just made. And I say that the bottom line to all of that is that we have to understand the value and worth in each other. And it takes us being together to create life. We can't do it by ourselves. And with that, when we work together, like she just said, we could do anything. It started with us. So we can't devalue one, a whole one in a more higher esteem. Both parties have made mistakes, and we will continue to make mistakes. But it's learning how to work together and understand that we come from one another. And without one another, we won't make it. Also, for us to do that, I think like the clearest thing would have to be communication. When we mature and can effectively communicate with one another, understand that we need one another, that's when everything starts changing.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank all the callers. And I'd like to thank you, Brother Waheed, for coming in. And I really appreciate you. I know we've been keeping you busy for the past couple of weeks, but I really appreciate your time. And Michonne.
If anybody want to get in contact with me, they could reach me and check out our website at eatchicago.org. And all you have to do is go to the website, and you can definitely send me an email just saying that you're trying to reach out to me. And we have no problem with traveling. We have no problem with reaching out. And hopefully you all will have me back.
All right. Well, you're definitely going to be back. Okay, everybody. Everybody have a nice week. And don't forget, The Cutting Edge with Michonne. Come on tomorrow night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 7 o'clock p.m. Central, 5 o'clock Pacific. Okay, that's it for this week. My name is Kenny Jones of Black Urban America. I am because we are because I am. Everyone, good night.